everyone. This is Brittany, and I'm going to be your moderator tonight. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa at any point in our program, please press star 3. And now, let's welcome Senator Costa.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you very much for listening in today's conversation, our telephone town hall. This is something that we've done a number of over the course of the past several years, a way to speak with our constituents in our district, the 43rd District, and get feedback on some of the things that are going on. Tonight, we're going to have a conversation about Allegheny County and moving from the red phase to the yellow phase under Governor Tom Wolf's plan for Pennsylvania. And we're blessed and fortunate tonight to have on our call with us a representative from the Pennsylvania Department of Health, Ray Barashansky, who was the Deputy Secretary for Health Preparedness and Community Protection from the Department of Health. He will help answer questions that folks may have along those lines. The purpose of tonight's call is a little different from the ones we've done in the past, whether they would be dealing with unemployment or just a general conversation with our constituents. Tonight's focusing on Allegheny County's moving into the yellow phase and really what that means to our constituents and to our businesses and to our communities. As you know, the governor back in early May made a decision to allow 24 counties to go into the yellow phase effective May 8th. And just this past week, May 8th, he made a decision to allow Allegheny County and some 12 other counties, I believe, in southwestern Pennsylvania, with the exception of Beaver County, to move into the yellow phase as well. So what does that really mean? It means a variety of things. In work and congregate setting, restrictions will be in place. Telework, the governor recommends, and Dr. Levine recommends, that we must continue to use telework where it's feasible. Businesses with in-person operations need to follow business and building safety orders in terms of mask, like, and PPE. Child care opening must comply with various guidance that has been promulgated by the Department of Health and also the Department of Human Services. Congregate care in prison restrictions are continuing to be in place, and as many folks know, all schools remain closed for in-person instruction. As it relates to the stay-at-home order, effective May 15th, it will be lifted for aggressive mitigation, but there are still some things that need to take place. As I mentioned earlier, the social distancing and the mitigation activities need to continue. There will be no more than 25 people in large gatherings. In-person retail would be allowed. Curbside and delivery is preferable if you can do that, but retail is permissible. Things like indoor health and wellness facilities and personal care facilities such as gyms and spas and hair salons and nail salons and other entities that provide massage therapy and other types of entertainment like our casinos and our theaters, they will remain closed. Restaurants and bars are limited to carry out and delivery only. I will tell you we're making some changes this week to allow for restaurants and bars in addition to providing for takeout, whether it be dinner, lunch, also now be able to provide for mixed drinks. It's something that the restaurant and bar community has asked us to do, and I think we'll have that legislation in place by Wednesday and likely on the governor's desk for his signature. So going forward, we hope that folks continue to respect the virus in terms of recognizing that it's pretty significant condition that needs to be seriously protected against to avoid a spread. We've been talking a lot about bending the curve, and I can say to you that I believe that Allegheny County, and for sure, but also Pennsylvania, we have been bending the curve or flattening the curve to allow the opportunity to get us to the yellow phase. As a county and as a region, we want to make sure we stay in the yellow phase so that we don't move back into the red phase, all with the goal of moving forward into the green phase, something we're looking to do. So that is by way of introduction of what we're going to talk about. We're going to take questions. We're going to ask folks to hit 3 on their phone if they have any questions. But before I do that, I'd like to ask Deputy Secretary Ray Barashansky to say a few words about where things are at and any updates that came today from the Department of Health. Ray?
Thank you very much, Senator. I'm hoping that everybody can hear me okay. The Department of Health appreciates the opportunity to be on tonight's town hall. With me in the room, I have Andrew Pickett. Andy is our Director of Public Health Preparedness here. Senator, you made a very important point about respecting the virus. One of the things that the federal government has said to us over and over again is that we don't set the timeline, the virus does. And we've seen time and again other areas wanting to open up very quickly or push some of the social distancing measures to the side. And what sadly, what we're seeing is We're seeing outbreaks in those areas. And so through very, very thoughtful consideration with various partners, including PEMA, the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, our Department of Community and Economic Development, the Department of Labor and Industry, and of course the governor's office, that's where we've come out with our guidance. And people should understand that our guidance really prioritizes health and public safety, and that's really what we want to do. We want to protect you. That's the business that we're in. So, Senator Costa, you mentioned telework options when feasible. That's a great point. You mentioned some of our congregate care settings as well as schools and prisons with restrictions meaning staying in place. Again, a good point. What we want to really do is isolate and quarantine. We want people to stay away so that way we can actually, as you said, bend or even flatten the curve. And we also obviously are limiting our mass gatherings, and you mentioned the restaurants and bars, which was exceptional. We're not doing these things because we haven't thought it out. We're trying to do these things because we have thought out the repercussions and the ramifications of what if we don't do this. And we're really trying to think about all Pennsylvanians, all Pennsylvanians' health, and all Pennsylvanians' safety. So I know earlier today there was a press conference that Governor Wolf put on, which spoke about some of the other issues regarding counties and how we all need to be in this together. Because I hate to coin a phrase, but pandemics are a team sport. So we really need to be in this together. With that, I will ask Andy if he has anything to add here, and then Senator, I'll go right back to you.
Good evening, everyone. Again, Andy Pickett. I'm working as one of our incident managers, directing our tactical public health operations as part of this response. So Ray may call on me from time to time to answer some of the more technical details of the questions we might have. But again, really, I want to reemphasize that we are in this together, and we're trying to do everything we can at the state public health, with our federal public health partners, and with your own Allegheny County Health Department to really ensure that we have the right pieces in place as we move forward in this phased approach to returning to normalcy. So thank you.
Guys, if I can just ask real quick, can you lay out the manner by which the governor undertaken and Dr. Levine have undertaken the red, yellow, and green phase? Can you explain to folks some of the variables or some of the factors very briefly that go into the calculation to determine whether or not a particular county or region is ripe for moving into the yellow phase, as we just learned?
That's a great question, Senator, and I'll go over just some of the areas that we're looking at. And I want to stress that we are taking a very phased, measured approach to this. Counties that were deemed ready to move to a yellow phase or reopening, it's typically because of a low per capita case count. It's also potentially because of their ability to conduct both contact tracing as well as testing for this, as well as some appropriate population density. So we looked at a lot of different risk factors when we talk about moving from red to yellow, or even potentially later when we talk about moving from yellow to green. We look at our overall number of reported COVID cases per the population in a discrete area. We look at some of our hospital surge capacity, and that includes but isn't limited to our medical surgical beds as well as some of our ICU beds. We look at our overall population density in that, again, in that discrete area. We look at the population over 60. We've seen, Senator, and everyone on the phone, that this particular virus is really hitting people who of a certain age and over, and we want to look at that before we allow areas to open up again. And then, of course, we also look at the number of workers employed in a specific industry sector or sectors. So all of these factors are taken into place, are taken into account, excuse me, while we also at the same time have developed both testing and contact tracing plans. And I want to make it clear to everyone that we want to see the data on all of those elements that I specifically mentioned as we move forward into the different phases, because we want to make sure that our public health interventions are working the way we want them to. I did want to stress that, like I said, the Department of Health has developed both testing and contact tracing plans, and I believe those are available on Governor Wolf's website, And those are the things that assist us in informing both our decisions to date as well as our decisions moving forward. Senator, I hope I answered
yes.
your question.
Thank you, Ray. And I think what the latter conversation, the statement you made with respect to the testing and contact tracing, very, very important as we go forward. So, Brittany, we had a couple of folks who've emailed us on some questions. We'll get to them real quick, and then we'll open it up the phone lines to folks who have questions for each of us.
All right. We got a question online earlier from Maria who asked, are you planning on testing residents and staff of nursing homes and assisted living facilities on a regular basis, even if they're not symptomatic?
I'm going to kick that to the Department of Health guys.
Thank you.
Yep. Good evening. So this is Andy, and yes, we are working on rolling out a plan that is going to allow us to take a more comprehensive look in how this virus has impacted our long-term care facilities. There are almost 700 licensed long-term care facilities and thousands of other congregate care settings that have unfortunately really been an epicenter of this virus, really due to the population and the unique needs of the population that live there. And so we are working aggressively through a multi-point plan to support these facilities, but increased testing is certainly one of the directions that we are going as part of that plan.
Great. Next question, Brittany.
All right, we have a question from Sharon in the north side here. Sharon, I'm going to put you live now. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, I'd like to know, with us going into the yellow zone, does that mean that there is going to be some liquor stores and some other places that you can still go in with your mask on and social distance, or you still have to wait and do the curbside thing and try to get through all day and probably don't get through?
Well, there have been a number of liquor stores that have been have provided for the last, at least up until this Friday coming up, you'll still have to do the curbside pickup. The number of facilities that have been open has increased dramatically. As we go forward further into the yellow phase, it's my understanding there'll be a select number of stores that'll be open. Am I correct, gentlemen?
That is the way we understand it as well, but even with that in mind, remember that what we want to try to do is limit gatherings, and I realize people don't often think about liquor stores or shopping centers or things like that as mass gatherings, but at the same time, let's balance that with the reality that there are going to be a lot of people who are looking to do exactly what you just asked if you could do, which means get out there and get something that they want. So we are limiting gatherings to more than 25 people, and obviously we want people to still socially distance and wear masks when applicable. But at the same time, Senator, you hit the nail on the head.
Thank you. Brittany, next question.
All right, we've got a bunch of questions here in the queue, but if you are listening in and you want to ask something of our guests, hit *3 and we'll get you in the lineup as well. So we're going to go to Kathy now in Squirrel Hill, who has a question about the requirements for wearing a mask. Kathy, you're live. Go ahead and ask.
Hi. Just to project, I know that everything is kind of being played by ear right now, but how long can you project us needing to wear masks in public?
That would be for Ray.
Certainly. Thanks. So, first of all, we appreciate the fact that you're as understanding of this as possible, and I don't say that lightly. I've been to visit people I know, and we stay 10, 12 feet away from each other wearing masks, and it's sometimes difficult to communicate. And I understand that Pennsylvanians have really sacrificed. And I don't want it to get past anybody on the phone that I have had personal and professional sacrifices from COVID as well. It's really difficult to say with that in mind about how long we're going to have to be wearing the masks. If you were seeing in the room right now, Andy and I are both sitting here with masks on, and we're more than 6 feet apart. I have to go back to what I said before, which is the virus really determines the time frame. So it's so tough to say that, you know, I wish I could say that by a certain date we would be able to call off these measures, but I can't say that because then I'd have to come back to you and apologize for not giving you the truth. So I am going to give you the truth as I know it now, which is the virus really determines the time frame. we're in a position where we really have made progress, but we need to keep up that effort. And you are all a part of keeping up that effort, whether it's through social distancing, listening to the governor's guidelines, or even wearing a mask.
Thank you.
All right, next we're going to go to Aaliyah, who has a question about what government entities will be open in the yellow phase. Aaliyah, you're live now.
Hi. I was just wondering, I have so much business I need to take care of. As far as PennDOT, the magistrate offices, downtown, DMV, so forth, are those going to be opening in the yellow phase, or do we have to wait until the green phase in order for that to get taken care of? I'm talking about, like, welfare offices.
Yeah. Ray, do you want to handle that?
Certainly. Andy looks like he's about to open his mouth, so I'm going to allow Andy on that one. Thank you.
So our understanding, and certainly we can only really speak for what we know 100%, which is the Department of Health, but our understanding is as we continue throughout this phased approach, we will see more and more state and certainly local services coming online, and we understand that we are, through our Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, the Department of Health is working with other state agencies to help provide guidance and information so that the other state agencies can begin opening up their doors and starting to, in the cautious ways that Deputy Secretary Barashansky and Senator Costa and I have been talking about, the very cautious ways that we can begin to return bits and pieces of daily life. So I can't speak to a specific timeline or which offices might open on what dates, but I know we are all working aggressively toward that as a group.
I'll also just jump in right after that and let you know that from what I understand, PennDOT will have limited reopenings in this phase. So
yep.
I know that I would tell everybody to go to their website to find out more specifics, but PennDOT will have limited reopenings in the yellow phase.
That's exactly right. I mean, here in central Pennsylvania, I'm in Dauphin County in Harrisburg today, and that's exactly right. They've identified, Thursday they identified which locations would be open. I expect later this week there will be identifying, if they haven't already done so, identifying which of those places, PennDOT, for example, will be open. Magistrates fall under the Supreme Court. There's a Supreme Court order that has been out there, or district justices, I should say. I think they have been working, I think some cases remotely, but for the most part, the courts are not really active right now. So I do think you need to double check with the courts, and we'll do that for you as well. Next question.
All right, we're going to go to Al in Squirrel Hill, who is high risk and has some questions about people at stores without masks on. Al, you're live with our guest now.
Yes, this is Al Turcasso. I'm in Pittsburgh. And I am a heart patient, and I've also been diagnosed with lymphoma. And I have to tell you, every time I go out, I feel like I'm almost sacrificing my life. I have to tell you that people are already not social distancing. It happened to me 3 times today, and they are also allowing people in stores without masks and not really enforcing it. So my question to the senator and frankly to the entire state government is, the people that are high risk like myself, you know, it almost feels like we're being written off, like it's almost like a percentage of people that's being written off. But what is the state going to do to protect us, because we want to live too, and not all of us can stay home because we're the ones who have to get the food whether we like it or not. And frankly, I will tell you, I'm on disability, and I don't have the funding to order food to my house most of the time. So what's going to be done to protect our lives? Thank you.
Well, I would say to you that the governor's put in a strong phase program and approach and is looking to work with everyone across the Commonwealth to ensure that they do respect the virus and do respect the orders that he's put into place. What you may have seen today, the governor made some comments with respect to those areas and those counties that are not complying with the order, what steps he might be taking with respect to CARES funding and things of that nature. But it really depends upon everyone doing their part. We said earlier, we're all in this together, and we have to ensure that people are doing what needs to be done to protect not only themselves, but others as well. You know, Dr. Levine has consistently said to us, the mask, for example, and social distancing are all mitigation factors to help us to make sure that we don't spread the virus to one another, and we need to continue to be able to do that. When mechanisms are in place, we hope that our businesses in particular would adhere to what they're required to adhere to. And if they're not, there's a reporting mechanism through the Department of Health. If folks want to file a complaint with the Department of Health, they can do that, citing exactly what the instance was and what the condition is and what situation occurred at a particular location.
Senator, this is Ray. I really appreciate you mentioning our complaint portal. And Al, I just want to say thank you. Thank you, A, for wearing your mask and social distancing when you go out. Dr. Levine has a phrase that she likes to utilize where she says, my mask protects you and your mask protects me. And that is kind of what we live by here in public health. We live by our public health measures. We live by the science. And these are the things that we really hold high. And so I would tell you that first things first, stores should be taking measures to ensure that people are masked upon arrival. A few days ago, I went to one of the grocery stores here, and I did go to pick up produce since it's been a while. I was wearing a mask walking in. There was somebody outside making sure we were 6 feet apart. They asked us to stay 6 feet apart inside the store. Everybody in the store was wearing masks, and somebody wiped down the counter after I got done putting my food there. This is what is appropriate, and this is what should be being done. And I will just echo what the senator said, Al, when I tell you, on the health website, which is health.pa.gov, we have a complaint portal. We want to hear from you where the store was and what happened, and we at the Department of Health will take that to the next level for you. The senator put it really, really well when he said, everyone has a part in this, and we appreciate you doing your part.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to go to Samuel, who has a small optometry practice, has some questions about their opening. Samuel, your line's unmuted now. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, thank you. We've got a small optometric practice, and we're really nervous about beginning to see patients again. It's not that we don't want to, but we don't feel safe for us or for them. And we haven't seen anything that says whether we should open up in the yellow. I mean, we're not going to right away anyway, just because we're still trying to figure out how we can protect everybody and set up barriers. And you know, the doctor is right in people's faces when they're checking people's eyes. And it's the same with dentists. I mean, what are we supposed to do? And where are we supposed to get better guidance? I mean, we get some from the Optometric Association, but what about from the health department?
So that's a great question. And I will tell you that what you said, about protection being important is 100% on the mark. And we want to make sure that in this phased methodical approach, we assure that all protection is considered. I can tell you that getting that sort of guidance from the Optometrical Association is important. I am of the understanding that we put out guidance for healthcare providers this past weekend here at the Department of Health, and I'll tell you again to go to health.pa.gov to take a look for that. Our website has been redone. Our website is very easy to navigate, and we are looking out for that as well. I think what you mentioned in the beginning of your comment where you said that you want to go into this slowly and methodically, I think that's very important. And so looking at what's going on around you, looking at rates of infection, even going to the Department of Health website to follow what we're putting up there regarding public data, those are also important. But remember that protection that you mentioned is extremely important. So I would tell you, we have put out guidance. Please go take a look for it. It should be able to assist you. And we look forward to working with you.
Great, thank you.
Okay, next we're going to go to Paula in the East End, who has a question about the availability of testing. Paula, you're live with us now.
What progress has been made to make testing more attainable for the average individual? currently the strings that are attached to the testing procedure has been very problematic for people who've been sick, and they've been just told to go home and stay, and they've been denied testing. The other questions related to that, what steps are needed if one wants to rule out infection? How is it paid for, and what is the average cost? Where is this being made available in the Black community? I know Allegheny General is doing some things, and I think UPMC, if you go in for procedures, I understand you're tested. But for the average person who's just home sick and they need to know if they're well or sick, what can they do? Thank you.
Definitely. So, you know, absolutely 100%, we want to make sure that anyone, especially if they're exhibiting the symptoms of COVID-19, has the availability to get a test. So right now, many of our healthcare providers and our healthcare systems are able to do testing either within their facilities, or many have actually created additional locations where they can bring folks in who might be symptomatic and who are working or who would need that test to be done. And certainly, we're also working to, you know, right now, the majority of our testing is done through those healthcare providers. But we're working to increase ways in the community that individuals can get testing. The Secretary of Health announced just recently a partnership with Rite Aid, where numerous Rite Aids across the state will be doing testing for individuals who are sick but might not have a doctor or a clinical home to go to. So we are working aggressively to increase access through additional community-based locations for testing. And I'm sure we all recognize that, you know, at the very beginning, this was difficult to get a test, but now we have the resources in place, and we are really encouraging everyone who has the symptoms and thinks they might be ill, contact your doctor. If your doctor cannot provide that test for you, certainly call the Department of Health at 877-PA-HEALTH, and we'll get you in touch with a location that can get that test taken care of for you.
I would add, the federal government recently allocated, I think it may be $11 billion, correct me if I'm wrong, which we're still waiting to get a portion of that being driven out to Pennsylvania to be able to provide more testing, particularly in the areas that are yellow, and I think that's going to be an important part of that conversation as well. Next question, Brittany.
All right, Sandy and Carrick have some questions about the upcoming election. I'm going to put Sandy live with us now. Sandy should be unmuted. Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, I'm a judge of election in my district, and I've been getting asked, when are we going to be able to vote, and if they're still voting where I am at?
So the first answer is, what's taking place, Allegheny County passed a resolution that they sent to the Department of State to limit the number of polling places where people will be voting. In the local municipalities, it'll be one location for each municipality. And similarly, I believe it's going to be one location in each city council district. So if you mentioned you were in Carrick, so that would be probably Bruce Krause's district, or it's going to be Anthony Coghill's district. There'll be one location, I believe, in that council district where folks will go. The county has sent that resolution up to the state and waiting for state approval to be able to do that. So that's where you will be going to vote if you vote in person. But we continue to encourage folks to vote by mail to avoid having to go to the polling place and vote. You're running out of time. I think we have two weeks and one day, before those applications have to be received by the county and the ballots back out by the county to you. So that's going to be important. And the ballots can be received up until election night at 8 p.m. on June 2nd. So you as an individual worker who worked with the county, election department, I would suggest you contact the county election department to see what your assignment might be, because I do know a lot of folks are concerned about working on election day, and that's the reason why they're reducing the number of locations to one in each municipality, except for the city of Pittsburgh, of course, and then doing, I think, nine locations throughout the city of Pittsburgh.
All right, next we're going to go to Kelly in Oakland, who has a question about contact tracing. Kelly, go ahead and ask.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to echo that the previous caller who was asking specifically about testing and supplies and resources for the Black community, that question was addressed at a very general level and not actually anything about what was being done specifically for the Black community, and that's a major concern because of other information coming from other parts of the country showing that, like, Black and Latino communities are particularly hard hit by the virus. But my question is actually about contact tracing. So I've been reading about reports from the different states about what their capacities are for contact tracing in terms of the number of people that they've hired. And it looks like the state of Pennsylvania has not hired that many people in terms of, like, number of contact tracers per 100,000 residents, even though the recommendation suggests we need about 30 people per 100,000 residents for doing contact tracing. It looks like the current report is that there's only about 160 staff members in the state of Pennsylvania doing contact tracing. So my question is really, like, what are the plans for hiring in terms of, like, how many people does the state of Pennsylvania or how many people does Allegheny County plan to hire? What does that look like on a per capita level, and when could we expect that to be up to full capacity?
Excellent question. So, you know, just like we are rolling out our return to normalcy in a phased approach, that means that we can work diligently to ensure that we have the pieces in place for this core public health practice of contact tracing. So, as you know, on last Friday, when we opened up the North Central and Northwest regions of the state to the yellow phase, we made sure that we have a robust contact tracing platform in place. Because of the lower population, we didn't have to bring on board as many staff in order to do that. And we've also brought on some technological advances that allow us to automate parts of the contact tracing system. Rather than having one individual contact everyone every time or every day for the 14-day quarantine period, this system will actually send a text message or a phone, will automatically call them and check in with the individual to make sure that they aren't exhibiting symptoms. And then if they are exhibiting symptoms, we have our public health nurses follow up and make an assessment and determine if they need to be tested. But we are have both the personnel side, which we are continuing to grow. We have a number of partnerships that we are engaging in, so some of the folks we'll be bringing on board will be actual staff or contractors for the department, but we are also working with other organizations who are willing to help us out for the good of our communities. And we also have the governor recently announced the civilian COVID Conservation Corps, which will be an opportunity to bring on additional workers and assist in our public health mission. So this will be part of a larger phased response, and we certainly have more information about this robust contact tracing plan on the Department of Health's website. So if you'd like, you can go find that and look at it in more detail.
And the only other thing I was going to add is, Andy, thank you. That was excellent. We're even looking at non-traditional partners, such as bringing in master's and doctoral students from various public health schools across the Commonwealth to aid us and kind of become our contact tracing core as well. But I will tell you that the best way to go is to look at our contact tracing plan online. It goes very in-depth, and it speaks about the various phases of our contact tracing plan and how we're implementing them even as we speak.
All right, next we're going to go to Chuck in Swiss Helm, who has some questions about spring sports. Chuck, do you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for doing this tonight. Really do appreciate it. I've got a couple of young guys in my house, 10 and 8, who want to get back on the field with their friends and towns and baseball. And I was wondering what you guys were thinking about for youth sports as we move into the yellow phase.
I'll be the bearer of bad news. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I think if we have any type of outdoor activities along those lines where, you know, kids will be playing baseball or soccer, it'll likely be in the August-September timeline. That's my position, my thoughts. I would defer to Ray and Andy for their thoughts.
I appreciate that, Senator. I can tell you that team sports are not permitted in the yellow phase, but I will tell you that I say that with sorrow and an apology. I, for one, am extremely sports-oriented, and I want to let people know that it's something that I think a lot of people in the Commonwealth are very focused on team sports, and we get that. However, we have to balance that with your health and your safety. And every time I realize I'm not going to be able to see a ball game, I think to myself, you know what, though? We're impacting positively the Commonwealth's health and safety.
Thank you.
All right, now we're going to go to Kathy in Squirrel Hill, who wants some clarity on the rules for senior apartment complexes. Kathy, do you want to ask your question?
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And I had something I need to add at the end of it. I am currently in senior housing. It is not a nursing facility. It is not skilled nor assisted living. It's just senior apartments. They are applying the same restrictions on residents or tenants as they would in nursing facilities, including restricting all family, pretty much everyone, from entering the building. And it is really difficult if you need any kind of physical assistance with something, you know, such as furniture, whatever.
Yeah.
It's really, and there's no clarity in terms of the law. I know what Pennsylvania landlord-tenant law says about the right to enjoy your premises and to have guests unless there's some legal prohibition. So I'd like to see if you can clarify some of this, because it's very vague in terms of, you know, a lot of the pronouncements are clear enough, and this public health necessity is very obvious. I have to add, I asked a question about masks, and I guess I didn't phrase it correctly. I have 25 years of healthcare experience, both in clinically and as an administrator, and it's obvious that we have to employ masks and social distancing and anything else which protects the citizens, or we will be overwhelmed. What I meant about the masks is I would think you have some sense of the what's projected into the future, because I'm making them and I want to know if I should make a lot or just a few, you know. That was what my question was about. So moving back, aggregated with the mask. We know, you know, we're a lot of Pennsylvanians are pretty well educated, I hope. So thanks.
Well, thank you very much for making the mask. I think that's wonderful. My wife has made a bunch for me and our family, and I think it's great that folks are doing that. Keep making them, because I think we're going to need it. We're going to be in this for the long haul, and I think that's going to be important. So thank you for your contribution in that way. With respect to the residence homes with senior homes, my belief is that I don't think they're required to follow the nursing home guidelines or personal care home guidelines, but I would defer to Ray and Andy to address that one if you could, gentlemen.
Well, the first thing I wanted to do, and thank you, Senator, was say thank you for making the masks. Andy and I are both wearing homemade masks right now. His looks like it's a Philadelphia Eagles, and mine has various stars of life that you see on the sides of ambulances on it. So clearly these were also made by people we know. And we're appreciative of those efforts. And as the senator said, keep making them. And thank you. In regard to your first question, you're in healthcare, so you were in healthcare, so you're going to understand what I'm going to say. It's not optimal, but at the same time, congregate settings like the one that you described are in particular risk of infection spreading like wildfire. And we have concerns about that. We have concerns for you. So I understand that this is a different type of congregate care setting. I understand it's a place that you live and not really an assisted living facility or a nursing home. But at the same time, we want to try to protect you as much as possible. And so I think that the people who run, or your landlord, for lack of a better term, are trying to do the same. It's not optimal, and sometimes it can be painful. And as I said earlier, I feel like we're all sacrificing collectively, and it's one of those things where we want to assure that we don't put people at risk, and so that's really the rationale behind it. And areas like the one you described, we could see real risk of infection.
Thank you for that.
All right, if you're on the line with us and you have a question that hasn't been answered yet, go ahead and hit *3. We'll get you in the lineup. Next, we're going to go to Lisa in Penn Hills, who has some questions about retail stores and CPR. Lisa, you're live now. Go ahead and ask.
Okay. Hi, Senator Costa and the rest of the panel. Thank you for making this meeting available.
Great. Thank you.
My two questions are, with the retail stores opening, what protocol will they have in place to protect the public? You know, say, like, if someone goes in, naturally you want to try on clothes. So what protocol will they take to protect the public with that? And also, what would be a new protocol in an emergency situation, say, like, if someone would be in distress out in the public? And what is the new protocol for CPR, because you can't social distance doing that? So what would be the new protocols?
Well, let me start with the first question, the first part. Stores, retail, would be required to have folks come in with masks or make masks available to them. They should also encourage and have their guests who come into their facilities or retail operations and practice social distancing. And hand sanitizers and the like should be made available. They should also be taking steps to do what some of the grocery stores are doing and other folks are doing, putting barricades up at the end of at the retail register location. Those are some things. With respect to trying clothes on, that part I'm going to have to kick to the Department of Health gentlemen and see if they have an answer for that. I don't think there's any limitations on that, but that's something, I think it's a great point you raised. And I don't know whether or not the virus could be contract move from a person onto clothes and then on back onto somebody else. But I'll defer to the doctor, the gentleman on the calls.
Go ahead. Yeah, unfortunately, Deputy Secretary Barashansky and I were sort of looking at each other over the table, and unfortunately, we don't have a good answer for that one. We know that various state agencies, including the Department of Health, the Department of Labor and Industry, Department of Community and Economic Development, have put out guidance for businesses on reopening and transitioning into the yellow and eventually the green phase. But I'm not entirely sure if anyone has included specific guidance for trying on clothes.
I will say, in regard to the second part of your question regarding cardiopulmonary resuscitation and other measures that would be taken by emergency medical crews, our Bureau of Emergency Medical Services here has put out a whole lot of guidance regarding personal protective equipment, the utilization of N95 masks, shields, and even other areas which slightly modify their typical clinical protocols. I'm not positive that CPR is one of those, but I can tell you that there's a lot of modification about the PPE utilized, the way that scenes are approached, and other areas specific to emergency medical services providers. So I have to tell you, that was a great question.
Excellent. Thank you. Next question, Brittany, related to child care, you tell me.
All right. Marilyn Wilkinsburg wants to know about child care centers reopening. So Marilyn, you're live. Go ahead and ask.
Thank you. I really appreciate your concern for those children playing baseball and being able to keep social distance. And I've worked in the child care field for a long time, and I'm concerned about children in daycare from infants through age 12 and their teachers being able to abide by all the regulations. And let me just say that I talked to the teacher today. She said that her director gave her some guidelines, but that nothing, they're not being presented with anything saying that these are the state guidelines. And I wonder, my first question is, are there state guidelines for child care centers?
Yes, there are guidelines that I think they're in place. And I know during the yellow phase, we're permitted to do child care centers. I would ask Ray or Andy to pick it up from there in terms of the specificity of those Department of Health guidelines, if you might.
So the guidelines that the Senator just referenced are actually out from the Department of Human Services through the Office of Child Development and Early Learning. So I would encourage you to check out the department, their website. They would likely have more information. Unfortunately, I don't have that committed to memory as well as I do the Department of Health information.
Thank you. Brittany, next question.
All right. Nathaniel in Pittsburgh wants to talk about food shortages. So Nathaniel, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you to the Senator Cuomo and everybody else involved. So one thing I'm hearing, I work in retail, and of course we're doing curbside assistance, but we're listening to the radio a lot, and I'm hearing a lot about these food shortages across the nation, and of course sometimes you see this in your local grocery stores and things like that. Certain items are out of stock. Is there any projection or plan about regarding these kinds of food shortages and item shortages in the grocery stores and other retail stores?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think food insecurity is a major issue that we've got to deal with that sometimes goes unrecognized. As you know, we participate in a number of food distribution centers with the Greater Pittsburgh Food Bank that has really have stepped up, and folks have stepped up to provide support to them, and the local media, for example, have been doing that, providing meals and boxes of food for folks. But it's a major problem we have to deal with. Our Senate Democratic PA CARES plan that we put out provides significant dollars into that program. So we have the federal CARES dollars that make their way to Pennsylvania. We have an obligation to get them driven out as fast as we can before December 31st. They need to be spent. And that food security insecurity space is where we're working with our local food banks to be able to drive out resources along those lines. With respect to stocking our shelves, so to speak, we're also working with the food merchants associations to be able to help them better handle how things need to be done as it relates to making sure that folks have access to some of the things that are important to them as we continue to phase into the yellow phase as we go forward. But that's a great question. But we have to take steps to recognize that we are going to be dealing with food insecurity. Listen, it's been an issue well before COVID. Unfortunately, we've not recognized it as such to the degree that we need to, but I think this indicates to us and shows us how important it is. So that's a great point. I don't know whether the guys from the Department of Health want to add anything or not.
I just wanted to add one quick thing, Senator, and Nathaniel, thank you for the great question. I believe that the Department of Agriculture here in the state has a plan, and you can go to agriculture.pa.gov. There's all sorts of guidance, both in regard to sanitizing food processing workplaces, the future of food security, and also guidance for food processing facilities to help keep workers safe. So there's a wealth of information on the Department of Agriculture's website specific to this, but great question, and thank you.
Yeah, and there's significant resources that are making their way, again, from the federal government to the state and to the ag community. Secretary Russell Redding has been outstanding in advocating for what needs to be done. We have issues with respect to, sad to say, that with milk and issues around milk and having to dispose of milk because we don't have a distribution chain in place to be able to utilize it and do what needs to be done with it and other types of things. We have run into some problems at some of our food processing plants. I'll be honest, they were not exercising social distancing and they weren't taking the steps and providing the PPE. And we ended up with a number of places across the Commonwealth that were needed to be shut down because they weren't thoughtful and taking the steps that were necessary. And I applaud the Department of Health and others that took steps to address that and push them to close them down until they comply with what needs to be done. Brittany, next question.
All right, we've got about 10 minutes left tonight. If you're still on the line and have a question, please hit star 3. Even if we don't get to you tonight, please leave a message and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Now we're going to go to Wilsonsburg Councilwoman Macklin, who's got a question about enforcement of masks. Councilwoman, you're live now.
Thank you. Thank you for having this meeting tonight. One of the issues we have is that often the stores are not able to enforce or don't know how to enforce when people walk in. So I went to CVS today and not everybody wore a mask that went in. I didn't realize there was a place to report this to, and so that's good. But who is one responsible for enforcing that on the ground, as you might say? Is that the store open owner or is that someone else? And I have another question with that. we've noticed an increase in domestic violence, which is public health. And is there any guidelines or anything going on in that area?
Well, with the second question, Pamela, thank you for being on the call this evening, and hope you guys are doing well in Wilkinsburg. I will say to you on the second question, domestic violence, I know that we are more closely monitoring things along those lines, other types of issues that's outside of domestic violence issues on the rise, other types of harassment and intimidation as well are something we're looking closely at that has occurred in pockets of Pennsylvania. So we're recognizing that, and we, and again, as I mentioned, the PA CARES program that we've talked about provides significant resources of the federal money into domestic violence programs to ensure, as we continue to go forward with this, dealing with this pandemic, that we have an opportunity to provide resources to those programs and get resources out to them quickly to provide assistance, and particularly housing assistance if necessary for folks as we move forward. With regard to the mask, my position is that first line of defense is the store owner, and they're required to ensure that folks are wearing masks in the facility, into the retail operation. And then the idea about if folks don't want to comply, the complaint line through the Department of Health is always available to address that. Beyond that, it could return to the local police department to be able to provide insistence that somebody would wear a mask. In areas that don't have police departments, it would be the Pennsylvania State Police to cover that area. If it's a bar or restaurant that really shouldn't be open, but if they're not exercising it, even if they're going in for pickup, the LCB would be in that role in terms of policing or enforcing that mechanism. I would turn over to Ray and Andy if they have anything further on that piece.
Senator, those are all great points, and I agree with all of them, but I do want to reiterate. It is on the store. The store should be not letting people in without a mask. This is a public health issue. And then the support would be from local law enforcement, or if there's no local law enforcement, we would be going with the Pennsylvania State Police. If you go into a store and people aren't masked up, et cetera, what you should do is go to our complaint. You should also remember that certain people with certain health conditions are not required to wear masks if it endangers their health. But I don't believe that's what you're asking about right now, and I do want to say that it is on the store, local law enforcement, and then at the same time, if you have a complaint afterwards, there's a complaint portal on the health.pa.gov website. It's right there. Let us know what's going on. We will pass that along. We're your partner in this.
You know, at the end of the day, Pamela and others, we don't want to have to cite folks. We don't want close businesses down or anything like that. That's not what this is about. It's about trying to encourage folks to respect one another and respect the seriousness of the virus. That's what this is about. And I understand folks are frustrated with this, but at the end of the day, it's in for the greater good. That's what we have to understand. Brittany, next question.
Okay, a bunch of you on the line have the same question, so we're going to go to Susie in Penn Hills, who wants to talk about public libraries. Susie, you're live.
Hi. I'd just like to know when the public libraries will be allowed to reopen and what kind of precautions they'll have to take. When you're stuck at home all the time, you need reading material.
I believe that libraries are permitted to be open in the yellow phase, but they have to exercise the social distancing and the mitigation practices that Dr. Levine has talked about and what the governor and her have laid out in the yellow phase, limitations of practicing those type of things, social distancing, having cleaning devices available, those type of things, keeping 6 feet apart. Gentlemen, anything more than that?
So from what I understand, I believe that the Pennsylvania Department of Education is actually working on guidance for that right now. You'll have to forgive me. I understand how important libraries are. I'm a big reader myself, and I know how that can really take your mind off of what's going on day to day. Really, you can lose yourself in a book or a magazine, but I think I'm a little hazy in regard to the specific details of libraries and the moving into the yellow phase. But I can tell you that the Department of Education is working on guidance for libraries even as we speak.
Thank you. Next one, Brittany.
All right, this is unfortunately going to be our last question. We're going to go to George in Bentleyville, who wants to talk about unemployment. George, you're live.
Yes, Aaron, thank you. Hey, I've been a full-time worker for all my life, working two full-time jobs, and I got laid off for the first time. And I've been laid off for 6 weeks now, and I did all the protocol, signed up online, and do my bi-weeklies, and I have still yet to receive my first paycheck, and I sign up on a Sunday. They say you should receive your money within 2 business days, but 6 weeks later, I am still not receiving any unemployment checks yet.
I'm sorry to hear that. And as you know, a lot of folks know, we've had some serious issues with our unemployment compensation system, and we are making changes to the system. We had to create a whole new system as it related to the folks who are 1099 and self-employed and the gig workers. But we are now past that. We are processing them. If you could, maybe give our office a call tomorrow, and then we'll take your name and information. I don't want you to give it to me now, but I want you to call me tomorrow in the office in Forest Hills at 412-241-6690. And that really goes for anyone that has any issues with unemployment compensation. Give us a call, and we'll be happy to help navigate through the system and find out what's going on with your individual or particular claim. And I'm sorry that that's the case, but we've had a major failure in unemployment compensation. But when you look at it, we have probably 1.8 million claims, and I think in total they've probably rolled out about over 3 million claims between people, you know, repeated claims and for subsequent weeks, and moved out a couple of billion dollars already. The system was not devised for 1.8 million people. That's the bottom line. And they've added personnel to help address the answer of calls and getting people to get their numbers and PIN numbers and the like. And at the end of the day, we didn't do a good job there, and we'll do better. But get me your information by calling the office tomorrow, and I'm happy to help navigate for you. And that really is the end of the call for this evening. I know a lot of folks have questions. Our system is telling us there's 30 or 40 more calls that have to be answered. I would ask folks to stay on the line and make their question, and then they will capture it and then facilitate your information to us to allow us to provide you with a response to that question. I really want to thank Ray and for his work and for being a part of our program, and Andy. These gentlemen are from the Department of Health. They did an outstanding job in helping to fill in the gaps where we didn't have the answers. So thank you for the work that you're doing, gentlemen. And thank you very much for your participation. And to all the folks who are on the line, thank you very much for participating in tonight's telephone town hall. We'll do some more of these as we go forward. Hopefully we'll be having a call within the next couple of months, I hope, if not a little sooner, longer, and have a conversation about what our next steps are going to be. So thank you for being on the call tonight. Thank you for participating, and your questions were informative, and I hope they helped other folks who are listening as well. So thank you all very much, and have a great evening, everyone. Ray and Andy, thank you again as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Have a good night.
Thanks.